We're back. This is Connecticut Issues and Answers, Capital Journal Week in Review, Report Watch Edition. A good Sunday morning to you all. With me today is one of the new faces of the Republican Party, Kyone Wolf. You are running for governor. Tell us why.
Well, I was born and raised here. I love this state. It just, you know, it seems right here. Trees are just the right height. I like seeing the lakes. I love the lakes. Something very special here. You know, the big river, but also all the little inland lakes that dot the parts of Connecticut. And the sound. I love Long Island Sound. I love nutmeg. I don't know. I mean, I grew up just totally in love with Connecticut and lakes and trees and rivers and nutmeg.
That's great, but somehow I'm not hearing any articulation of the Republican vision. Can you tell me what resonates for you?
Ann Coulter. She is totally smoking hot.
How about in terms of taxes and job creation?
You know, the people from the State Central Committee gave me some briefing books to read, but there was a Portlandia marathon on last night, and also some other things came up.
What other things?
I was going to learn about state politics, but then I got high. I was going to study Republican stuff, but then I got high. Whatever happened to Afro Man? That's something you guys should tackle here on Connecticut Issues and Answers, Capital Journal Week in Review, Report Watch Edition. Capture a new Sunday morning demographic, people who wake and bake.
You seem like a bad fit for the Republican Party.
You think I can't do that Sarah Palin stuff? I've killed a deer, pretty much totaled my car in the process.
That's all for this week. Next week, can Pez increase your brain power? The Connecticut-based candy maker says, actually, maybe we'll just put a rerun on.
Meanwhile, on today's show, Connecticut Republicans talk about the future of their party. And now, he hasn't trusted a Republican since Margaret Chase Smith dumped him, Colin McEnroe.
Well, she didn't handle it well. In fact, I found out about it on Meet the Press, just watching. I mean, it was not handled right. All right, we're going to talk about the Republican Party today, and it's an interesting year for them. Maybe it's always an interesting year for them, but it's an election year, and there's some possibility of some political real estate changing hands. And we're going to talk a little bit about the numerical uphill climb that they often face, but also, like any party, the issues that they have with identity, and maybe the issues of the Republican Party's identity have been more chronicled than other parties in recent years. And here in Connecticut, obviously, there's also a whole different set of special challenges. As we go along here, I just want to say before I even introduce the guests that we'd love to have some feedback from you out there. So as we go along, the phone number is 860-275-7266 if you're a Connecticut Republican and you have something to say, or maybe you're an unaffiliated voter. Jerry Labriola would like very much to meet you if you're an unaffiliated voter. 860-275-7266. Call in with your comments. You may tweet us. You may tweet right at us at WNPR Colin. Greg Hill, who you just heard in that intro, is our tweet master. We're also very excited that our former producer, Patrick Scahill, who is 30 years old as of today, is working phone. So when you call in today, because we did not have an intern, Patrick has graciously decided to, or agreed to come back and work phones. We are thrilled. All right. Let's meet the people in the studio. Jerry Labriola is the Connecticut Republican State Party Chairman. Isaiah Diaz is an attorney and associate at Dressler Strickland in Hartford and chair of the Latino and Puerto Rican Affairs Commission. He's been on Where We Live before. State Representative Pam Sawyer is a Republican representative in the 55th District, which covers the towns of Andover, Bolton, Hebron, and Marlborough. And we're going to add in just a second by phone one of the real rising stars of the Republican Party, Mayor Aaron Stewart, newly elected mayor of New Britain. I'm just going to begin where it all kind of always seems to begin for me, and I think all of you will probably have your own individual takes about this. But, you know, recently I wrote a column sort of saying I'd like to see the Republican Party kind of function in a different way and get its act together in a different way this time around. The Current just ran an editorial saying pretty much the same thing, that, you know, it might be a really interesting year if you can get the right candidates. And when that happens and when the story goes up on the internet, an interesting thing happens, which is a whole bunch of people. It's always the same names, and it's probably a group of about 10 or 15 people jump on the comment threads, and they basically do what I think, Jerry, you sometimes refer to as a purity test. They say, no way am I voting for those people. They're rhinos, Republicans in name only. I'm not interested in moderates. I don't like McKinney because he voted for the gun bill. I don't like this. I don't like that. If they're not real Republicans, if they're not red meat conservatives that I would identify from my watching of Sean Hannity and my listening to Rush Limbaugh, I don't want to have anything to do with them. I would never vote for them. Now, I don't know. First of all, Jerry, as party chairman, one of your jobs, I think, probably is to sort of discern How big a group of people is that? To what degree should they have a significant voice in the party? And to what degree do their sensibilities drive any central party decisions that you and the people around you wind up making? When you look at that whole thing, and these are really people, they're calling for what you sometimes refer to as a purity test. How does that play out in your head?
Well, good afternoon, Colin, and hello, Connecticut. It's really great to be here with you and to be part of such a distinguished panel of great Republicans. Look, I don't pay that much attention to that 10 or 15 people that love to comment on every story or jump on Facebook and try to demagogue. We keep our eye on the big picture, and that is we're looking to build a unified Republican Party in Connecticut and build on the successes we already have. After all, we are the majority party in Connecticut in terms of control of local government. We control nearly 60% of the towns of this so-called blue label state that the cable news networks have given us. And the trick for us now is to see if we can extend that success we're having at the local level to congressional campaigns and statewide elections here in 2014.
I want to come back to that whole question of your successes at the local level as contrasted to some of your other maybe not so great successes at other levels, because I think there's some real structural issues that are worth talking about. But I just want to press you a little bit here. Okay, so it's 15 sore heads who pop up on the internet, but do you have a sense of how many people they speak for? In other words, to what degree are you trying to, in fact, kind of sort this whole question out? To what degree is a moderate Republican a better idea than somebody who plays to a harder line? I'm not going to say Tea Party, but, you know, a harder line red meat conservative group.
Well, you know, there is no question that there has been an outpouring of enthusiastic new folks at the grassroots level that have wanted to get involved in the last few cycles. This phrase Republican in name only, I always have to chuckle at that. I've been – because I'm called a rhino all the time. Every Republican state chairman, anyone in the establishment is a rhino. Mm-hmm. But I've been involved on the Republican town committee level and with elections for 33 years. So sometimes it's these enthusiastic newcomers, in my view, are the rhinos. Mm-hmm. And we are the real Republicans. We've been here all along. And we pretty much will guide the ship going forward. And I'm extremely optimistic about our prospects over these next 10 months.
A little bit of talking smack there, Jerry. I like it.
Let's get it on, maybe.
Yeah. And so, Isaiah, I know that you see this a little bit differently, at least in terms of what are sometimes called social issues, right? That in some respects, you feel as though the Republican Party does need to aim some of its message at – well, I'll let you – I'm not going to put words on your mouth. You tell me what you think about what he's saying.
Yeah, sure. No, I agree with Jerry to a certain extent in that there's no possible way that an individual can fall in line with every single Republican ideal. And I'll give you an example. I'm a trial attorney. And so I'm a big – and I also love the Constitution, so I'm a big fan of the Sixth Amendment. But if I lived in Texas, they would call me a rhino because I'm more of a plaintiff's guy than an insurance company guy. But me personally, I feel that if it's not your thing with regard to like let's say you're a pro-choice person, for example – if that's your thing, that's fine. But I think that the Republicans still need to try and maintain a strong component of their base, which is the people of faith. Like, for example, I'm from inner city Waterbury, where Waterbury is a heavily Democratic city. However, it is also loaded with a ton of social conservatives. I don't think that we should just turn away from those people or try to shed those parts of our identity. I think like any political party, we have different pieces. It's kind of like the human body. If, you know, I have my right arm, I have my left arm, I have my head, I have my feet. If you look at the Republican Party like the human body, you've got your Christian wing, you've got your establishment people, you've got your business people, and we all should just function like a body rather than do the rhino thing. But I don't think that we should cut off our right arm just because it may draw a little bit of controversy, because there's no way you're going to appease everybody. You're going to cut off all your limbs until you have no identity left.
When people just heard you make that analogy, some people's minds probably went into a different place and they thought, well, really, when we start talking about people of faith and sort of social conservatives, We're really talking about the part of the body that includes the genitalia and the ovaries, you know, that really that these are all about reproductive issues. I mean, when you say people of faith and when you say social conservatives, is that what you're talking about? Are we talking about an issue other than, say, abortion and other kinds of reproductive issues?
Oh, absolutely. I'll give you the reason why I'm a Republican. I was a youth minister for many years, and I was very offended at how the progressives constantly launch a blatant attack on any sort of semblance of religious expression and freedom of religious liberty. I mean, it's like a constant battle. I actually love having these discussions with inner city ministers who are Democrat, because they say to themselves, you do realize that the progressives are slowly trying to strip away all of your rights one by one. You are aware of that, aren't you? And of course they're not. It's kind of like the same thing that I was embedded with. I grew up, born in the inner city, I'm Puerto Rican, I guess I'm supposed to be a Democrat. That was until I realized that the party platforms run afoul of my religious beliefs.
Pam Sawyer, you're listening to all this. You've been a state representative for a really long time. How long have you been a state representative for?
Are you calling me old?
No, I was not. I wasn't going there, because I know you were inducted very, very young. So how long have you been up there now?
21 years.
And so I'm guessing that, first of all, for a lot of your constituents where you are their state representative and townsperson first and a member of a Republican Party kind of second, really. I mean, they may not even think that much about you as Republican. You know, as you listen to all this and you listen to sort of this party that you've belonged to for such a long time, reflect on its identity. And particularly in 2014, where do you think the strengths of the party are as in terms of reaching not only the 400,000 or so registered Republicans in this state, but the real gold mine, which is the 800,000 or so unaffiliated voters?
Without the unaffiliated voters, the Republicans aren't going to take any type of leap forward. And I think one of the things we've looked at, certainly in the House of Representatives, has been a common philosophy we're able to grab hold of. And we know that across the country, we can certainly talk fiscal constraint. We can talk about keeping our regulations down so that they are in a regular, every businessman grasp. Because we feel, I think, across our area, and I've heard it from Hartford, I've heard it all the way down to Greenwich, that we have to have a business ability for people to be able to what? To be able to get jobs. Because I think the war on poverty is certainly going to be something that is going to be top on the list in the discussion in 2014, whether it's at the local level, whether it goes all the way through to the top of the chain.
How is what you're saying right now radically different from what I would hear from Dan Malloy or Brendan Sharkey, the Speaker of the House, or Don Williams, the President of the Senate? In other words, I hear a lot, particularly from Dan Malloy, almost obsessively about job creation, about, you know, what do we have to do to jumpstart the economy? Obviously, he's been through a pretty bad time for the Connecticut economy. But, I mean, how is what you just said Republican as opposed to bipartisan?
Well, if you're talking about children in poverty, I think the Republicans will turn around and say that's because their parents need a job. Mm. And we need to be able to make jobs that are not just entry-level positions. And they can't be just promises of jobs where money has been thrown at the Big Five and they say that they're going to create another 200 jobs. We need to have the jobs, the job training that matches that has to be done now. And we have to have a smooth process for these companies to be able to move forward.
I want to add to this conversation Aaron Stewart. Aaron Stewart is, as I say, the newly minted mayor of New Britain, and a quality that runs in the family a little bit. We'll talk about that as well. But so, Aaron Stewart, you're young. You're a rising star of this party. What was it about your message that resonated in an urban election? I mean, New Britain's kind of an unusual city in the sense that it's a little bit more politically divided than a lot of Connecticut cities, where sometimes the Republican Party barely makes a showing at all or barely even runs candidates. New Britain has a pretty complex political structure. But all the same, as a Republican, what did you have to say to the people of New Britain that resonated so well with them?
Good afternoon. Thanks for having me, first
sure.
and foremost. It's a pleasure. It's an honor for me to be on the show. I didn't really have to say much except be myself. And I think honesty is a trait that you don't see too often in politics or in politicians. So I just was true to myself. I was honest with people. You know, also running in local elections, you have to have some type of connection with your community. I spent you know, for a good part of my life since I was probably, you know, in high school, volunteering in numerous organizations. I coached New Britain High School softball. I know the people. I've been in the community, of course, having a family member who was a former mayor, I'm sure may have helped a little bit. But, you know, in terms of the quality of conversation that you have with people, people just want to know that their voice is heard. So during the campaign, you know, I mean, running for mayor is a little different than, you know, state politics or federal politics, but they just want to know that they have a seat at the table and that there's a person in office who's going to listen to them and be responsive to their needs.
As we go along here, by the way, once again, our number 860-275-7266. Everybody's welcome to call in, 860-275-7266. You may tweet us at WNPR Colin. Greg Hill is our tweet master. He'd be happy to hear from you and to tweet back at you as well. So, Erin, as a young female Republican, obviously you sort of also watched over the last, even in the last year or two, there's been quite a lot of conversation within the party and scrutiny from without about how the party talks to women and kind of famously these kinds of seminars even for how Republicans can articulate and talk to women and reach women effectively. Doonesbury obviously has had a lot of fun with those. But, you know, maybe the people that you went to college with, people who are your peers, your friends, I don't know how many of them are Republicans. Are there people your own age that you knew in college or someplace else who say, really? How can you be a Republican? That's not our party. That's not the party for women our age. They don't believe in our issues. They don't care about us. First of all, do you get that? And then if you get it, what's your answer?
Sure, of course I get it. But the people that are my age aren't affiliated with a party to begin with. They're registered independent because they don't believe in party politics. And I think that's more of a common thing amongst the younger generation is that they don't associate themselves with either side because they don't believe in it. They feel that they just don't have a government that they can trust. So why would they partake in the process? It was really hard, I'll be honest, to get younger people out to vote. But let me tell you something, being a younger candidate, they showed up.
But what did you say to, say, friends of yours even when you said, yeah, I'm running as a Republican? I mean, what did you say when they objected to it as a label, as a concept? On principle, you ought not to be a Republican. You're a young woman. If you hear that, what's your answer?
I don't think I've ever had anyone say to me, you shouldn't be a Republican because you're a woman. I'll be honest with you. Mm-hmm. Because I think that my – and everybody knows, you know, me, and I put it out there, my stance on social issues. I just don't – you know, don't tell me what I need to do with my body, and if you're happy, I'm happy for you.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll stand true to that.
Pam Sawyer, you're also a woman of a slightly different generation. But, I mean, you know, as you saw this thing, once again, unfold over the last year and seminars about how to talk, you know, how can Republicans talk to women? How can they not alienate women? I think that's sort of part of the thrust right now. What was your reaction to that?
We've had a lot of discussion around that, certainly in the caucus level. We have found that those outreach across the state, there's a little variety, certainly from those women who are impoverished to those women who have had education and have some affluence. And the discussion has been, where is the commonality? What are the needs in the state of Connecticut for women? And I think as soon as the Republicans start talking about those needs, will be the strength and that will move the party towards a stronger woman base.
Jerry, is this a conversation that exists at the national level but not at the Connecticut level? In other words, if we could all agree that to some degree or other, nationally, the Republican Party has a, quote, woman problem, unquote, would we then also agree that it's true in Connecticut, or is it just less the case here?
Well, if you just look at the registrations, I mean, I think we're about 53-47 men as registered Republicans, and I think by my last look at the statistics, I think the Democrat Party is 57% women.
Mm-hmm.
This gender gap is something that, you know, how we measure it is something I'll leave to the real political scientists. But it's, you know, we get demonized so often in so many ways that we are always waging a war against every group there is, which is just a false perception that is perpetuated against our party. I mean, we, by and large, what unites us as a party is economic conservatism and the ability to try to grow an economy, which would raise all ships here in Connecticut. But we get distracted by being demonized by our opponents, and in an effort to redebate Roe v. Wade every 2 years, to say that we're against every group So it's a challenge we face, and we try to set the record and correct the record whenever we can.
But Isaiah, it sounds like, if I was reading you right, in some ways you do want to have some of these conversations, which perhaps some of the other panelists on this show would regard as somewhat risky conversations in the state of Connecticut, conversations about, say, reproductive choices.
Yeah, and like I said, that's why we're all individuals. Like me personally, I'm not sure what everyone else's background is, but I grew up in the north end of Waterbury, and I still live there. And I can tell you that the majority of people there, especially in the Latino community, are not really, thrilled about the whole fiscal policy stuff, because they don't get to see the benefits of that. However, there's a strong group of evangelicals and Catholics who hold on to those beliefs. And I think that if you really want to have a presence in the inner city community, then you need to give them something to be passionate about, something that they're willing to face persecution for. Because let's face it, every single Republican, like Jerry mentioned, were demonized. If you're a Christian, you're a hate monger, or if, you know, you're pro-life, you're a male chauvinist pig, or, you know, we're always labeled with these horrible names. But I think if you really want to have a presence in the inner city, then you cannot abandon completely the platform with regard to the socialists. If you're not feeling them, fine, then don't trumpet them, but don't take them away from the party either, because then you're taking away the guns from guys like me.
You know, it seems to me that we're right back to where we began, which indicates that I'm not doing a good job of guiding this conversation, except that I think we are right back to where we began, in the sense that there's a tension between two things. One of them is the idea that Republicans are a big tent, right? The argument that really kind of anybody, almost anybody plausibly, you know, with some notable exceptions, could be a Republican. There aren't litmus tests. There aren't purity tests. This is a party that's accommodating of a lot of different people. And yet, from Isaiah, I think what I'm hearing, Pam, is the argument, no, give me something to die on the cross for. Give me something that is so important that I would sacrifice my time. Because I think what you're saying, Isaiah, is for people to really engage passionately with this party, they have to see it to some degree or other as a crusade for things that they believe are really important and right or deeply wrong.
I don't know if I would use the term crusade or hanging myself on a cross, but I think that those are issues that are near and dear, especially my area of expertise is the Latino community. I live in Fairfield County. I don't live in some of the areas that some of my colleagues here do. But I can tell you from my perspective, historically, that's going to be the best area that the party can use to reach minorities. I wouldn't be here if that wasn't the case.
Yeah. So, Pam, are those two visions reconcilable? I mean, the vision that he has and maybe the vision, the bigger tent vision, too?
Oh, absolutely. And all you need to do is say something like getting tough on crime. You know, I remember certainly when there was a wonderful split in the House of Representatives and the Senate in the mid-1990s. Somebody here is also old enough to remember that. Yeah. And the Senate was Republican, the House was Democratic. And the things that we were able to get done was huge. And we were able to do the welfare reform. We were able to do a big crime package. We were able to do a lot of the prescription reform under insurances that were able to help a lot of people. But one of the things we weren't doing at that time was putting in these unbelievable, overburdensome regulations that make it almost impossible to build a new shopping center, where now you need 47 different permits to be able to get the ability to put in four stores in a row. So where we're looking at, I believe, in Isaiah's conversation here is finding the place for people to have a job that is a job that is part of a career path and not just a job that's holding them back.
We're going to take a quick break here. I do want to say our number, if you want to join the conversation, and some people already have, our number is 860-275-7266. You may tweet us, as many people are, at WNPR Colin. We'll be back after this.
Shame on you, don't punish us all, just to please a few. Our Constitution, nation, and God are under attack, and that's why we can't vote for a Democrat. Oh, no.
All right, we're back. This show is going very fast. I have so many things that I want to say to Republicans and ask them about. It's moving along. We do want to hear from you, though. 860-275-7266. I'll remind you who's here. The mayor of New Britain, Aaron Stewart, a rising star in the Republican Party, is with us by phone. In studio, Jerry Labriola, who's Connecticut State Chairman for the Republican Party. Isaiah Diaz is an attorney, an associate at Dressler Strickland in Hartford, and former chair, as it turns out, of the Latino and Puerto Rican Affairs Commission. State Representative Pam Sawyer from the 55th District, covering Andover, Bolton, Hebron, Marlboro, is also here with us in studio. We're talking about the state, the present, and the future of the Republican Party. We'd love to hear from you, 860-275-7266. Before we go to the phones, I want to just talk about, I mean, like maybe even kind of an interesting thing happened during that very brief break that's that leads to something I want to talk about. So, Jerry, one of the things that one hears, and if you are an old codger like me, and I started covering the Republican Party in Connecticut in 1979 in the state legislature, and in the state legislature then, there were guys that I and women that I thought were just titanic presences in the Republican Party. I mean, this is sort of the era of Rusty Post and Larry DeNardis, and Chris Shays was a young legislator. Jerry Stevens was a kind of crusading leader within the party. You know, there were just lots of really exciting people. And I'm not suggesting that there aren't exciting people now, but one thing that one hears nationally at every level is it's harder and harder to attract people to become candidates. The kind of high-quality person that you want as a candidate is harder and harder to get. During the break, you gently put a little muscle on Isaiah to see whether he'd be interested in running at some point. So is that a struggle for you, just finding the right people to go up, particularly in some of these fairly tough races where it's going to be an uphill climb?
Well, it's actually it's a challenge, but something I very much enjoy. I mean, the top job of a state chairman of a party is to be the fundraiser in chief. So that's most of my time. But the second area where you spend time is recruiting and cultivating great candidates. And I think there's a little bit of an excitement in the air about this upcoming cycle. So I am in a very time-consuming vetting process going on right now. There's a lot of quality candidates, an impressive field of candidates coming forward for high office, including the races for governor and the entire underticket. So I actually will be going back to state party headquarters after this radio show, and I have two candidate appointments. And so we go through the process, and I do not find it to be difficult in finding very high-quality candidates coming along. And I'd be happy to go over names, but I know the time is short. I don't want to take too much of this segment.
Well, we may get back to names. I think the names might be kind of interesting. But, you know, I mean, Aaron Stewart, I want to sort of talk to you about this, too. Obviously, you've got this a little bit in your blood. I mean, maybe some of your destiny was foretold. Your father was mayor of New Britain as well. He brought up in a fine Republican household. But not really. Oh, not really? Okay.
My mother's still a registered Democrat. Oh. And actually, my great-uncle, Dominic Bottolato, served as a Democratic state representative for, oh, my God, almost 30 years.
Actually, we should have your parents on. We did a whole show about politically intermarried couples. It was one of my favorite shows we've ever done. But I guess maybe to recast it a little bit, the idea of you running as a Republican candidate at least wasn't a far-fetched thing. You could see it. You could watch it happen in your own house. You could understand what that would be like. But do you think it's hard for the party right now to get other people from your generation involved as candidates?
I think it's hard to find candidates in general, and I think both parties have that struggle because, you know, you're, in essence, and I hate to say it this way, you're putting yourself up for public crucifixion, and, you know, you're putting yourself on the line, and it's a risk that some people aren't willing to take. I mean, I took a leap of faith to run for mayor of New Britain, and some people aren't as big of risk takers as that. Some people have a lot to lose. You know, they have stable jobs. They won't be able to drop everything and hold office. At 26 years old, I didn't really have too much to lose at that point in time. And I thought it was a great fix. I could make a positive change for the city. I think that, you know, it's a struggle to find candidates one way or another. And we find this with the local Republican Party here in New Britain oftentimes where, you know, I have to I wouldn't say arm twist, but, you know, convince somebody that it would be a good fit for them. But, you know, I guess if you want to talk about women in politics, too, a lot of times they struggle from not feeling confident in themselves. And I've seen this a lot with me trying to get other women interested in running for city council. They just don't feel, like, confidence, like, that, like, they can do it, like, they can make a difference. So it's about having a good person at the head of that organization, at the head of the party, to make people feel confident and good about running. And you can find these people. There are plenty of those who are interested in running for office. Oftentimes, they've just never been asked.
Let me grab a call here. We've got Rick calling in from Southington. Hi, Rick.
Good morning.
What's on your mind?
I'm a registered independent, though I usually vote Democratic. And I do believe that there's a valid reason for a more conservative voice, you know, the voice of smaller government and financial responsibility. But I feel that the image I get of the Republican Party is, especially in the last few years, since 2010, is extremist views, embracing ideas that are provable lies, you know, the continued assertion that the president is not an American. I mean, I have a hard time taking the Republican Party seriously. I feel like there's a small group who are the tail wagging the dog. That's sort of my impression of the Republican Party right now.
Pam's nodding as you're talking. Before we go to Pam, though, about that, let me just play a little clip. We were talking last week about Tom DeMoor on Where We Live. Tom DeMoor, a much beloved political figure, one of these guys who, as Bill Curry said, had many opponents, but almost, well, actually, I think he said, to the best of his knowledge, no enemies. Somehow or other, Tom is Republican state chairman and in other capacities just kind of had that gift of not polarizing people. But in that context, we were talking to former Governor Weicker, who I think echoed some of the things that you hear Rick say right now. Let's just play a little clip from Where We Live.
Look, there's no mystery to it. All you have to do is take a look at the results. They are abysmal. The problem is it reflects on the state in the sense you cannot have a one-party state. And Connecticut is a one-party state because the Republicans reject the demographics that are Connecticut. So I think that if there's anything to be learned from Tom DeMoor, it's that politics has still not changed in the sense that the majority has to be addressed, no matter, I repeat again, whether they're black, Latino, gay, poor, blue-collar, women. I mean, that's what you've got to address. That's what Tom addressed. The Republican Party still isn't doing. They're putting up a group of personalities, basically all of whom believe in the same thing, which is to appeal to a very narrow band of what is Connecticut.
Pam Sawyer, is that fair?
Well, we certainly have had the interesting comments go around the state about being flavored by national politics, and it has affected us here in the state. There's no question. Does Connecticut Republicans feel that they're different from the national model? I'm going to say yes.
Mm-hmm. So, but on the other hand, both Rick and Governor Weicker, they're talking about a perception anyway, right? They're talking about a perception that, once again, we're back to that whole issue of the sort of a small group of people dictating the image of the Republican Party. And Jerry, I would assume, particularly as it plays out, as the national perception of the Republican Party filters down in Connecticut, that's a problem for you.
Well, look, I see the glass half full very much. If you look in 2010, it's the Republican line for governor that received the most votes. And that's evidenced now by the fact that all our candidates are on the top line all the way through 2014. Dan Malloy received less than 50% of the vote. He combined with the Working Families Party, and voila, we have Governor Malloy, the largest tax increase in the history of the state, and the worst performing economy in the nation. That's what we got out of it. We can't afford four more years of this administration. But to say that we are out in the wilderness, and I have the utmost respect for Tom DeMoor, and we're going to miss him, and for Senator Weicker, in many ways. But to suggest that that we are so far out in the wilderness that we have no chance is not true. I mean, this state is a little closer to purple than blue. It's just we have to execute as a party. And you mentioned the numbers at the outset of the show. The way I look at it, again, the glass half full, 63% of registered voters are not Democrats. So we have the opportunity. We have to nominate candidates that will resonate. and we have to execute as a party. And I think we're going to do that over the next 10 months because we can't afford four more years of Dan Malloy.
Just a reminder, and that numerically, that is something of an effortful glass half full recasting. The Republicans, the ratio is roughly 8 unaffiliated voters to 7 Democratic voters to 4 Republican voters. It's actually even like a tiny bit less favorable than that. But it's basically 8-7-4. So sort of bear that in mind as we're talking. But, you know, Jerry, it seems like to a certain degree you've had some real successes at the municipal level in this last election. You have some of these exciting new candidates like Aaron. You've got Eleanor Carbone winning in Torrington. You won some new mayor's offices, and sometimes you won them with people who maybe do break a little bit of the stereotype of the white male Republican. So that's great. On the other hand, I think there's a real difference between running at the municipal level and at the state level, where, in fact, isn't it structurally difficult if you don't have the governor's office, so you don't have the power of patronage and all the other things that governors can use to build their own parties up and build their power base up, and you don't have the legislature, you really don't have things that you don't have deliverables in some ways, some of the deliverables that people look for in return for financial support, for political support, as well as you've done at the municipal level, in terms of running these congressional races and statewide races, whether it's the governor's race or the underticket, you guys are kind of hitting off the back tees structurally.
Listen, no one ever said it's going to be easy to be state chairman of the Connecticut Republican Party. I'm the first chairman since 1994 that did not have a Republican governor. But we're overcoming that. It's the folks are starting to come to the very clear realization that the Democrats cannot fix this economy. It's not just the 3 years of Dan Malloy. It's the 2 generations of an ironclad grip on Connecticut's legislature by the Democrat ruling class. And folks are finally starting to see that's not going to work. The only party that really is devoted and committed to fixing Connecticut's last place economy are Republicans. And I really think that will be the overarching referendum style issue that will carry the day. And we're thrilled with candidates like, I tell you, I can't tell you how happy I was when Aaron Stewart called me and said she was thinking about running for mayor. So we have these rising stars. We almost ran the table on medium-sized towns and cities on November 5th. We won a special election. Pam's colleague, Sam Balsito, won a seat in June by 18 points, a seat that had been Democrat for 40 years. These are the canaries in the coal mine that tell me good things are coming over the next 10 months. And to your unaffiliated voters out there, it takes 10 minutes to go switch over to our party so you can participate. You go to the registrar of voters office in your town, and you can participate in our nominating process, which will be unfolding over the next few months.
You know, Pam Sawyer, one of the things that we're all watching, obviously, is the shaping up of the gubernatorial field. A lot of people wanting to run, some of them coming out of the state legislature. And legislatively, anyway, the person with the highest profile is John McKinney. And in certain situations, for example, if we lived in England or something, John McKinney's whole sort of parliamentary party would just be with him automatically, right? There'd be sort of no question about that. So, but I would imagine that there's a certain amount of nose counting and head scratching and stuff like that going on over the General Assembly. Will John McKinney come into this race with broad-based support from his legislative brothers and sisters on the Republican side?
I think it's going to be a mix. And I think because you will find that we have really 4 and 5 candidates that are now working their way into the process, and not everybody has put in the final paperwork to say they are running. I think people are holding back just a little bit, sort of watching how the field is being molded, who's really working the hardest. I think that's going to be a big bellwether for the convention. Who is the person who has been working around the state, talking to people, but not only the Republicans? I think they will have to be talking to the unaffiliateds before the convention, because that's the kind of feedback that the Republicans will be getting on the local level.
You know, Aaron, as now, of course, you're a gigantic power broker in New Britain. And so these candidates will be coming to you. I assume you haven't really declared support for anybody in particular, either in the governor's race or the congressional nomination. What are you looking for, though? You know, and Pam just talked about some qualities. What would get the backing of the Aaron Stewart machine in New Britain for a gubernatorial candidate or, say, a 5th District congressional candidate?
Sure. I think the ability to talk to inner city people and be able to come in here. And, you know, I think it's a stigma that the and it's a known fact that Republicans do worse campaigning in urban settings for one reason or another. But you can't come in and ride off the cities. You've got to know that we have to maintain a certain percentage in New Britons and Meridans and Danbury's to be able to even have a shot. You've got to have a candidate who's willing to come into New Britain and campaign with me and go walk, you know, in areas of town that they may not see themselves in. Because you've got to learn what these people's concerns are. You've got to learn about what we're dealing with and how unemployment is affecting my city. You've got to be able and willing, you've got to be willing to do that first and foremost. And the person who can do that is going to win my support.
But do you also have to answer a question maybe a different way than Pam Sawyer would answer it out in Hebron? In other words, if you're walking door to door in New Britain and talking to those people that you just described, and I want to hear what Isaiah has to say about some of these same groups of urban voters, but Aaron, with you right now, when they're talking about unemployment, when they're talking about issues of child care, child poverty, inferior education, whatever those issues are that come to the fore, it's not just a matter of knocking on their doors and smiling at them and talking to them. You've got to have an answer, right?
Oh, absolutely. Otherwise, they're going to kick you to the curb faster than you can say boo. I know that one.
So how is that answer? In other words, how is that answer a Republican answer and also an answer that's palatable to the people you're describing right now?
I don't really know whether it's not a Republican answer. It's about the realities that our cities do face in the state of Connecticut. I mean, we've got an achievement gap in our education system that is, it's sad. You know, I've got students that aren't performing even nearly as close as our neighboring towns of Berlin because of the lack of resources that we have to provide for them. So I think that the candidate who comes to New Britain and is able to fully understand that and, you know, not just say, oh, you're just not using your resources wisely, that person is going to have a better shot at being successful here. But, I mean, you've also got to, you know, there's a certain you've got to be able to prove yourself a little bit more when you're a registered Republican running in an urban district.
Yeah, and I want to try that out on Isaiah too. So, in other words, I'm a Republican candidate. I'm Tom Foley. I'm John McKinney, or I'm David Walker. I want to run for lieutenant governor. God knows why. Or I want to run for Congress in the first or the fifth. So, take me to Waterbury. Take me to Hartford. Walk me around in the neighborhoods. Introduce me to your people, quote unquote, to urban voters. And what do I need to say in order to reach those voters? You've talked a little bit about social issues and what resonates for you, but in terms of the things that are going to come up, and I think Aaron, you know, kicked a lot of those tripwires just there, what are the things that I need to say?
And I'm glad that she brought up the achievement gap because with the work I do with the commission, we study a lot of data, and Connecticut, for fourth and eighth graders, Latinos nationwide, we're dead 50th, the worst performing state in the country, which is pathetic. And I think what we just need to do is tell people the truth. And the fact is that democratic principles do not work. You know, the teachers' unions, not that I want to isolate any specific issue, but I think we just need to go out there with an honest message and tell people the truth that the policies that this administration is using are not going to work, and we have to give them ideas. But you have to be real with people, though, and you have to be willing to go into those neighborhoods that are sketchy. Pardon my labeling there, but it's just the truth. You cannot be afraid to walk into the inner city. People love it when you walk in their neighborhoods and you go and visit their stores or their restaurants in the inner city because they feel like you're making an honest effort to try to connect with them. But if you're not willing to do that, you're not going to be successful.
We're going to take a quick break here. Before we do, I want to quickly mention, I want to get this on your calendars right now. A week from tomorrow, January 22nd, Wednesday, we'll be at Watkinson School at 7 p.m. for a program on the healing power of music. We're going to look at this from the point of view of some personal stories by two very prominent Connecticut musicians who've overcome significant medical problems, they believe, partly through the healing power of music. We'll also talk to a neuroscientist from Trinity, somebody who's involved in the burgeoning field of music therapy also. It's going to be an amazing program, and it'll be half a panel discussion and half an amazing concert by the Kate Callahan Band and Jim Chapdelaine, two fabulous musicians who work together and separately, and they will do both of those in the concert setting of our panel discussion. There's no way that I'm not doing a good job of describing this, but please visit the Watkinson School site. I think it's watkinson.org to find out more about how to get tickets to join us for that, and we'll be back after this.
Even if we don't agree.
I would like to withdraw one of my earlier remarks. Ann Coulter is not smoking hot. Martha Dean, that is a longer conversation. Have you seen that jawline? It could cut glass. Today's show was produced by Betsy Kaplan and me. Greg Hill tweets for us at WNPR Colin and appeared in the intro. The part of Bill Curry was played by Nancy Johnson. For articles, links, videos, and photos of the Faith Middleton Show staff as part of a Barry Goldwater look-alike flash mob, visit our website, WNPR.org. Tomorrow's show is all about compost. And now, back to Colin.
All right, we're talking about Connecticut Republicans. Our time is short. I'm going to go right to the phones. I think this is Kevin in Griswold, whom I've got. Hi, Kevin. Are you still there?
How are you? Hello to the chair and Aaron. It's Kevin Two-Vote School Check out in Griswold.
Yeah, now, this is really an interesting race, right? It initially came down to a one-vote margin, and then you had a recount, and then it was a two-vote margin, something like that. Do I have that right?
Yeah, with the recanvass, we went up a whopping vote. So we ended up winning 854 to 852.
And Griswold, obviously a bellwether for state politics. I mean, this could be a seismic shift right here.
Well, not compared to some, but in our own way, yes, it is. So I just want to say that, you know, it's interesting, the party. I went to a dinner and talked to both on your panel today. And Aaron is a rock star, for the record. I think if we have any, you know, we have young, enthusiastic people like yourself stepping up. I'm very optimistic of the future for our party and, you know, across the state. And it's really not, you know, what we resonate. I think I'm 44, so I'm a little bit older than Aaron. But what we resonate to the voters, I think it's just that change in attitude, that energy, and that, you know, it's not the crusty, and I'm not trying to label because I've been a Republican since 18. But what we envision as the old Republican with the cigar sitting in the corner, that's not what it is. We're out there, we're working, we roll our sleeves up and get the job done. And I think that's what is resonating with people today. And that's why I think I'm optimistic about November. I think we have a real shot this year.
You know, Jerry, first of all, thank you so much, Kevin. Jerry Labriola, one thing that does typically happen, and it sounds like you're blowing a slightly different horn right now, although I think I've heard every single Republican state chairman blow that horn too. And it's sort of like, we're going to run every race, we're going to run every race hard. You know, realistically, what happens is, I mean, in some of these congressional seats, I mean, you can win money in bars by challenging people to name John Larson's last four opponents, you know, and Rosa DeLauro also similarly impregnable, hard to, yeah, I'm sure you can name them, but maybe not. I'm not going to put him on the spot, Pam. I'm not that mean. But you know, some of these races, the party doesn't run them all that hard. You get somebody, you don't give them a lot of support. It's like Mission Impossible. If they're caught or captured, you'll deny all knowledge of their existence. Can you really do that? I mean, we haven't had a really competitive attorney general's race in a heck of a long time, too. Can you really do that? Can you really run hard races in all these districts? Because even if you're going to lose in the first or the second or the third, you know, you have the opportunity for people to go on a lot of programs like this one and television programs, getting the Republican message out if you do it right and coordinate it well.
Well, first of all, it's great to hear from Kevin, and thank you, Your Honor, for calling in and cheering on the panel here. Again, we are the majority party in Connecticut in terms of control of local government. It's just a question, can we get that to translate to the statewide level? I'm very optimistic. Everything is going to flow from the top of the ticket, though, Colin, and that is the key. I mean, we had to suffer an 18.5-point loss at the top of the ticket in 2012 with a presidential campaign that was non-existent in our state. And that is a tough headwind. And miraculously, with Pam's great caucus and our Senate Republicans, we did not lose a seat in the legislature despite that top-of-the-ticket loss. If we are winning at the top of the ticket, we will get the collateral benefit, which maybe includes taking the Connecticut State Senate, which we so dearly need. And then you can have a chance to put maybe a congressional seat or two in play. But that's how I look at through my prism right now as state chairman of the Republican Party. It's all about the top of the ticket and winning the governor's race.
All right. We're going to have to stop there. I don't dare ask another question. I do want to thank Aaron Stewart, the mayor of New Britain, and even a bigger rock star at the end of this hour than she was at the beginning. Also, State Representative Pam Sawyer, Republican representative in the 55th. Isaiah Diaz, an attorney and associated Dressler Strickland and chair, former chair of the Latino and Puerto Rican Affairs Commission. Jerry Labriola, state party chairman. Thanks to all of you who helped out. Special thanks to Patrick Scahill. He is our former producer. He's a big news guy now, but he came back to help us with phones today. And once again, I really do encourage you, consider coming to Watkinson School on January 22nd. This is going to be an amazing musical evening and also an amazing conversation about actual sort of medical understanding of what music does neurologically and in other ways, ways in which medical conditions can really be addressed through music. Join us for that. It's open to the public. You'll find out about tickets from the Watkinson School site. Thanks to Kion Wolf and Betsy Kaplan. We'll be back tomorrow. Have you tried to spread your love to those who love the NRA? Though they might be quite reluctant, cause they'll wonder if you're gay. You should hug a Republican. I'll say it once again. You should hug a Republican today.
For the governor's race, please vote Martha Dean and Kion Wolf on the Republican ticket. She'll fight for your Second Amendment rights, and I'll just mainly gaze at her face.